Hey.
Hey.
Here we are, everybody. Class is in session. It is Academia Giallo for March 2024. Yes, I got the year right. And it is also St. Patrick's Day, which is why you'll notice some of us are wearing green, or we have green somewhere in our shot, or we're wearing a shirt that represents a movie that has green in it, as Kitley pointed out before we got on here live. So it all counts, and I love it. And also, Mr. J. Blake Ficarra is broadcasting live from a bona fide Italian opera house.
Well done, well done.
From the set.
Way to level up.
Yeah, hopefully people in the audience at the opera won't get annoyed that you're on stage, like, doing a podcast.
Fuck those guys.
With my back to them.
Exactly. But yes, we are talking about, we are going to conduct ourselves well today, gentlemen.
Whoa, wow, that was good.
I know. Mm-hmm. It would have been better if it was like a symphony movie. But anyhow, we're talking about opera from 1987. And those of you who've been following Kicking the Seat for years might say, hey, you guys already talked about opera during Scuola Argento, the sort of the prototype of these Italian horror movie explorations. And you would be right. AC, a number of years ago, you and I, and wasn't Kaufman on that show with us?
I think it was Jason Kaufman, yes.
Jason Kaufman, yes. We were discussing...
That's right. The
unrepentant cinephile himself.
That was 20 years ago.
More like seven, I think. but time flies. But it flies like four flies on grave... Never mind, I'm not going to make any more jokes. Wow. At least not this early in the show. But yeah, so we covered it back then for the audio-only version of the podcast, which you can find in a link down below. If not right now, then very soon. But we are going to talk... We're going to revisit it now that I've had a few years here in Giallo School, as we call it, and see if my perception of the movie has changed, my understanding of the movie has changed, my appreciation of Argento has changed, and also to get the thoughts of my esteemed panelists here. What do you think about opera revisiting it for the second or second hundredth time? I don't know. But joining me today are my esteemed faculty. Well, first, I am the student, Ian Simmons of Kicking the Seat. We have AC of Horror 101 with Dr. AC. We have John Kitley of Kitley's Crypt. We have Brian Martinez of the Giallo Room. Brian, something's going on there. I saw some kind of an announcement about the Giallo Room. What do you have anything to share?
We're debuting a new format on the YouTube channel. Cool. Like a new kind of episodical whatever. Like I don't know. I was inspired because I noticed on another YouTube channel somebody I guess commandeered some Giallo Room imagery. Because I haven't done anything on that channel for years or whatever. So I guess somebody found some images of the Baron and then appropriated it for whatever they were doing. So that's, I was like, you know,
cool.
What?
Is that cool?
Well, I was thinking, if you just lay dormant for a while, if you don't do anything, somebody's just going to come and grab your stuff and do it or whatever. So I was like, you know what? Let me do something totally brand new. So starting next week, I actually said I was going to do it this week, but I was in the process of interviewing and trying to get a new job and whatnot. So we're going to do it next week. So something brand new next week coming from the Giallo Room on YouTube.
Do you have a date in mind? Something we can look out for, or we'll
stay
tuned?
I don't do that. I'll just I just upload it and then it happens. So.
Well, happy birthday. Happy belated birthday, Brian, as well.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
Yes. Happy belated birthday, sir.
I'm part of the 50 Club now. So
that's right.
Woo. I'll be joining you in a few years, but I'm not there yet. I'm still a young whippersnapper. Speaking of which, we have also J. Blake Ficarra of Scored to Death. I'm working on my transitions, guys. But how you doing, sir?
I'm okay. I'm hanging in there.
All right. Well, let's talk about opera, Dario Argento, 1987. AC, you might remember, because here's the thing. I have movie amnesia about some of the films we talk about on this very series. You know, you'll we'll watch something, we'll discuss it, and a few months later, be like, "Oh yeah, it was like that the moment and whatever." I'll be like, "I'll take your word for it. I forget." With opera, it was a matter of I remember the highlight scenes, like the of course the nails in the eyes and the dagger through the throat and all that stuff. And I'll put up the spoiler banner in a bit when we get into it deeper. But watching it yesterday, I realize how much this movie I'd forgotten in just the last like 7 years. So it was a rediscovery. But I remember thinking in my imagination, because I hated Dario Argento's, why again, I'm blanking on the movie, Suspiria. There you go. I hated Suspiria the first, I think, couple times I watched it. And then I gradually came to appreciate and love that movie. But I feel like opera is, it might have been the first or at least an early indication of like, oh, I can totally get with Argento and get on his wavelength. Does that sound right to you, AC? Were you in the room when I started having these epiphanies?
I mean, that could very well be true. I was actually going to ask you how it went down for you the second time, because opera was one that my friend David Lee White, who introduced me to a lot of Italian horror, that was kind of one of his gateway to Argento was opera. And so I was curious how it went down for you a second time around, even if you didn't remember it, you know, blow for blow.
Yes. We're not talking about that kind of a movie though. No, but
maybe you're not.
Wait, did I forgot. Are we watching the X-rated? This is not opera from, no, anyway. So I think the thing that stood out to me as far as my recollection, because we've talked about some Argentos in the intervening years and we talked about Argento's Dracula last year, just how it's not as saturated, it's not as colorful. I mean, the production design is off the chain regarding this giant, the centerpiece opera that, you know, this movie is about. But, you know, you think about Argento, a lot of times you think color, you think blood and richness and almost like this surreal otherworldly quality. We don't really have that here. It's very almost desaturated, it seemed to me. But you know, I could be watching, I think I watched this on Tubi, so I have the Blu-ray, but for reasons beyond my control, i.e. there were small kids in the house and I didn't want them hearing screaming and mostly opera music, I had to watch this streaming on a not great transfer, so maybe that's my perception. But let's talk about everybody's, we'll go around the panel and talk about everyone's first experience with opera and kind of like how you encountered it and how you reassess it now that you've seen it however many years later for this show. Blake, let's start with you.
I'm not positive, but this may be the first Argento movie I saw. It was either this or his segment of Evil Eyes. I saw them around the same time, and I'm not positive which one was first. I do know that in the mid-90s, kind of at the height of Tarantino's rise, just after Pulp Fiction, there was a book that I got at, I think, Borders Books and Music called The King of Pulp. And it was basically segments of interviews of him talking about the movies he loved. And there was a little section about Italian horror. And I grew up in, suburban Albany area. And there just weren't a lot of, even the mom and pop stores didn't have a lot of like cool horror movies. They had some, but they didn't have a lot of Italian stuff. So reading that book is how I was kind of introduced to a lot of stuff. I remember reading and he's talking about stage fright. And then he talks about opera. And then later he talks about Fulci. And so I was just reading about these movies that I had no idea what they were. Flash forward a couple of years. And then I start to find these movies, places like Anchor Bay start releasing them. But opera, specifically, I saw there was a Terror at the Opera VHS at Coconuts Music in like the bargain bin. And my buddy, Chris Funderburg at the time, who has his own kind of thing called Pink Smoke, where they talk about movies and stuff. This was like 97. And he had seen Suspiria and he picked it up and he said, "You should get this. You would like this." Mm. And so I bought it and he and I also saw Two Evil Eyes around that time, which we rented. I have to admit, I didn't love it the first time. You know, like, I had nothing to, I had like no primer. Like I didn't, had never seen an Argento movie or an Italian giallo movie. And I just like, I just wasn't into the sensibilities of it. And then as I got into Argento over the years and seen, I did love his Black Cat of Two Evil Eyes. I thought that was intense. But with Argento, it was like, it took a couple of things. Like I didn't love Deep Red the first time I saw it. And then eventually his stuff just kind of clicked for me and I was all in. And now I've seen it a, you know, handful of times. I saw it a screening here, was the American cut of Terror at the Opera here in the city a few years ago. And, Coralina Cataldi Dasani was there and I've been lucky enough to get to know her over the years. And, so now I have a soft spot in my heart for this movie, but, it took a while for me to get there.
Now, what I don't know if I was aware of this, but what is the difference between the between opera and Terror at the Opera? Two different cuts. Is it is the American
about
version
12 minutes.
Trimmed up? Or
I think it's about 12 minutes is the difference.
Wow.
Yeah.
In terms of like gore, or is it more the like the pacing stuff? Or
yeah, I don't really recall what's cut out of it. I just know it was like, it was the American version and it was like a really crappy VHS tape. The original time I saw it, you know, we hadn't, back then we didn't have the luxury of the widescreen formats and on most VHS copies and all that. So, and I remember I watched it with my stepdad who also was not primed for it either. Back then, I used to watch a lot of these kinds of movies. Like, God bless my mom. She's seen Texas Chainsaw Massacre, like, at least four times over the years, and Evil Dead and all that stuff. So, but it took, you know, for me, when I was teaching a horror class at SUNY Purchase, and I showed Suspiria, and I just said to them, you know, like, some of you are going to connect with this, and some of you are not. I mean, that's just kind of the way I think Argento and maybe Giallo is in general. Like, it either touches you on some kind of, especially with Argento, some kind of like visceral level and you connect with it, or it's just not your thing. There, I don't think there's a whole lot of in between when it comes to Argento and a lot of giallo. And it just wasn't really my thing until I don't know what movie it was, but eventually it just all kind of clicked for me and I just kind of fell in love with it.
Then I feel like that's kind of been my experience too. I mean, having like watching Suspiria a couple of times with some guidance by, you know, my esteemed colleagues and friends, and also watching other kinds of Argento, movies because yeah, he does, there are different flavors of him for sure. And this I think is probably more accessible than Suspiria was, but I can watch opera and go back to Suspiria and say, oh, this, yes, this is definitely the same guy. Especially when it comes to that bonkers ending. Am I coming? I think, does someone have me on their speaker? I'm hearing myself. Sorry, it's a technical thing.
I have you on earphones.
Okay.
As
if anyone's playing me through their speakers, I don't know. Anyhow, let's see. Kitley, tell me about opera, your experience with it.
Show us your tattoo.
I don't have an opera tattoo, or at least not that I can show you. Being the older scholar here, I was waiting for this to come out because this came out on video, like they said, Terror at the Opera. I had already seen Deep Red or the Deep Red Hatchet Murders, Tenebrae, which was Unsane, and then Suspiria, which was actually uncut on VHS. So I was waiting for this to come out. This, I will not say is Argento's best, but it is my favorite. And I do agree it doesn't have the color scheme that he's known for, but I think there's a lot more depth in this film than in a lot of his other ones. He was really trying to, he was trying to make a point of certain things as far as the violence in his films. What the cause and effect of violence does. Plus, this was also after there was a time when Argento was actually going to direct an opera. I think it was a version of Rigoletto. Either that or it's a pasta, one of the two. But that didn't, that ended up not happening. So there's a lot of correlations between Ian Charleston's character in this and Argento himself. And there's just, I think there's a lot of deeper meaning to the, what he was trying to get a point in the film. And it's still I watched that again last night and I even thought about it. I'm like, I really don't need to watch this again. I'm pretty familiar with it, but I watched it again anyway. And it still holds up for me. There's a lot of plot holes and a lot of questions. The lead actress, I don't think, is a strong lead to carry the film. And there's a lot of plot holes that makes no sense as far as why she runs out in the street every time somebody is murdered in front of her. She just, like, wanders off.
Wait, but, John. Hold on a second. We got to pull the car over here, sir. It's a mobile school bus. Are you trying to tell me... A mobile classroom, I should say. Are you trying to tell me that there's logic problems in a giallo and they actually took you out of the film in some capacity? Because you're the one who always puts up that stop sign and says, look, it's giallo.
No, I didn't say, I said there's plot holes in it and there's.
But I like them.
It's not logic. It's not a logic error. It's just this character's kind of a dingbat that, oh, my boyfriend just got murdered. I'm just going to go wander around in the street in the rain. Oh, someone else got murdered. I'm just going to go wander around.
We all have our coping devices.
Exactly.
You know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of another movie that came out in 1987, Hellraiser, where Kirstie encounters the Cenobites in the hospital. And the next time you see her, she's like, wandering through the streets in that daze, like seeing the visions of Frank and the Cenobites.
Well, seeing your somewhat boyfriend murdered is a little bit different than seeing demons from hell coming at you.
I've never seen my boyfriend get murdered, but
I've seen both. But I
derailed you, Kitley. What's your other point?
I love the behind the scenes, I guess, more of this film that makes me forgive a lot of the faults that I would say that it has.
Okay. All right. Brian.
Me?
Yes, you in the back.
Well, it's funny that Jay Blake mentioned coconuts, because that's actually, you know, I always mentioned that I was a store manager working at Coconuts, so I had the accessibility of, like, ordering whatever I wanted from there, you know. So I remember I was, like, on this huge Argento / Giallo, you know, / Italian horror kick when I was the manager there. So I saw this was coming out on DVD at the time or something, and so I ordered it. And So when I first heard about this movie, eons before I watched it, you know, it was that image of, you know, like her with the needles pinned under her eyes. And I was like, that's just fucking genius. That's like the coolest thing I've ever seen, you know. And when I sat down to watch it, you know, feeling like, oh, my God, this is like later Argento versus earlier Argento. This has to be amazing. I think I was a lot let down, like when I originally watched it, especially because of the ending. I think if nothing was shot in the Swiss Alps, this movie would be a lot higher for me, you know. But that ending, that whole bit out in Switzerland or whatever, when she's falling in love with nature and all that stuff, and then just the way that, like, the cops show up out of nowhere and, you know, they're like, oh, we've been trailing him for 2 days or whatever. It just, to me, it killed the entire suspense and just what the movie had going for it, like what it set up. You know, and, you know, there's purists that love this movie from beginning to end. And, you know, like John said, some people feel that this is their favorite Argento film. For me, it's like on the bottom of his better films, you know, in terms of like I would actually, you know, I know I'm going to get hell from this, but I would put Trauma over this movie. And I think I mentioned that when we were doing the Trauma episode or whatever, but that's just me. That's my personal taste. I love the kills in this movie. There's that bit in the kitchen when they're trying to hide from the killer, and there's like lighting that's happening. So there is some like lighting gels or whatever that do happen in this film. For whatever reason, that's flashing all these different colors in the kitchen. So I don't know if she's got like weird mood lighting in the kitchen or whatever, but there's brilliant stuff in this film. Like when she puts on the calming tape or whatever, and then there's like shit going on in the background. Like, I just love that juxtaposition. I love the crow or the raven scenes. I'm sorry.
No, I'm sorry. I interrupted you, but yeah, just the sound system alone is like this hero device. I mean, I know this is like CD players and like high-tech equipment were all the rage back in the mid to late 80s. But
high five.
There's so many so many close-ups of like the CD readout and going to tape mode. And just like the ASMR of like clicking the different modes and the tape starting up. I mean, I honestly got like this weird kind of satisfactory chill just listening to that, because now when we press buttons on devices, you don't hear anything unless you turn on a sound effect. So that was really cool. And also, you know, we are 30 years out from the movie The Crow, and you just mentioned The Crow. It's actually a raven. But I couldn't help thinking the extreme eye close-ups on these ravens, which we see throughout the film, they look exactly like what was it Alex Proyas was using in The Crow, like in The Crow close-ups. I almost feel like he swiped those from opera or something. He might as well have. There's no difference.
But, you know, I do like this film. I don't, like I said, I don't rank it in terms of my favorite Argento films. But like, there's some great stuff in here. Like, the thing that for my taste weighs it down is like that scene with Julia, I think, Coralina's character. Yeah, that whole thing where she's looking for the magnifying glass for 30 minutes or whatever, and I'm just like, come on, man. I think there's like some pacing stuff, but Argento is basically Argento in each one of his films, so he definitely takes his time, you know, building up a certain scene or whatever. But I don't know, there's just certain things that I don't like from this film, but there's things that I fucking love from this film. So it's one of those where when I watched it, I actually watched it as a three film watch. When I watched Demons 2, and then Opera, because it's got like a lot of, like, you can almost feel like it's a continuation from the Demons, but from the Demons movies, because it's got Urbano in it, and it's got Coralina in it, and it's got some it's got the dude, I think his name was Baby Pig or whatever, when he was like, real Rambo talk or whatever, he's like up in the stands when they release the crows or whatever. So like, there's like stuff that I really love about this film. I love the heavy metal. I love the operatic epicness of it, you know. Plus the fact that I think during pre-production, Argento's father passed away. So it feels like a different tone after the release of this film, and then going forward into Argento's career. Like, I just think that it tapers off in terms of quality and just maybe the way that he produced films later on or whatever. But I don't know, it's a weird bird, no pun intended, because I think it's like the last good giallo film of the 80s, and then, you know, going into the 90s, it's like it's a whole new era for Italian cinema. So it's definitely like, I think it's one of those like bookends in terms of like the genre of giallo. Definitely worth a watch if you ever want to get this one. This is like the one to get. This is like the three disc. It's got the US Orion cut on here, so I think that's the Terror of the Opera one or whatever. And it's got,
put that one out, Brian.
Scorpion. Okay. Scorpion releasing.
That is a gorgeous cover. Yeah.
I believe Severin.
It's a great slipcase, John. Look at the slipcase. Oh my God. It's amazing.
I believe Severin is putting this out in 4K.
Sweet.
Shortly.
Oh, nice. Wow.
I believe.
All right. So AC, we come to you at last. I left you for last because we've already talked about this film, but I cannot remember if and how you answered this question 7 years ago.
Well, I feel like I kind of, in our earlier, I mentioned that David Lee White, who's a Italian horror fan, I've had him on the show a couple times. This was kind of one of his entry, you know, Dario Argento entry points for me. So he passed this one along to me. He gave me, actually, I think like he was just giving me like Italian horror. So he gave me Demons. He gave me this one. He gave me Black Sunday. So it was kind of like his primer for, you know, here's getting into Italian horror. And I think opera is immediately accessible for people who aren't as versed in Italian horror, because it's pretty, you know, there isn't that, there isn't the crazy gels and things like that. It's a pretty straightforward story. You get to the ending and you go, okay, like that seems to tie into the Italian non-logic, where you're like, okay, suddenly we're in the Swiss Alps and she's crawling on the ground and, you know, making friends with lizards. And you're like, because I remember going back to David and be like, what the hell is up with that ending? He's like, you just got to go with it. And I went, okay, that's the watchwords to hang on to when you're watching Italian horrors. You just got to go with it. I would also say this is one of my favorite Argentos, although it didn't land with me as well this most recent visit, because I was just kind of like finding little things that bothered me. I actually like Christina Marsalak a lot as our lead.
Yeah, me too. I think she's
a really fun, capable, appealing. You're rooting for her throughout. She's a little strange, you know, in terms of how she copes with things, for sure. And I love Coralina as a person. I don't think she's well treated by this movie. I think her character is not, as Brian was saying, like, just given a lot of like dumb things to do and dumb things to say, and is asked to kind of like just overact, throughout. So, I didn't love her character. And it rubbed me wrong this way, in a way that I hadn't remembered. I was like, oh gosh, like she's the least appealing character in this whole movie.
Thank you for saying that. I wanted to say that, but I love her so much.
I love her dearly. It's not her fault. That's the thing. I don't think it's her fault at all. Yeah. I think she's given weird things to do, weird things to say, and she's probably directed to be really big and loud to be that juxtaposition to Betty.
Help me out here. What does she do that's so like crazy and weird? Because I loved her character in this movie.
She's just overacted.
Yeah, just yeah. Exactly.
Or you might say
my comparison to other people.
It's operatic. I think she offers a good contrast to, you know, she is the costumer.
Yeah, she's pulling a lot of faces.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Although it does lead you to wonder. For this big opera house that has this huge wardrobe room with all these sewing stations,
yep.
And she's the only person there.
Yep.
So yes, maybe that's why she's so sporty.
She's that good, guys. I'm telling you, she's amazing.
I also think that maybe her performance is also hindered by the fact that it's dubbed with somebody else's voice.
Yeah,
it's not her.
100%.
Not her voice. So.
Thank you for backing me up on this, Blake. Best performance in the film.
Can I defend the ending real quick?
Please.
Yes.
The part with the salamander, the lizard that she gets friendly with. The whole ending, I don't know, needed to be that big and that abstract, but the whole point of the film for Argento is that you can watch violence and not be demented or be a psycho. That's the whole gist of the film.
To me, she looked like a psycho hugging the fucking earth like that. You know what I mean? At the very parting shot, like
the point
she's
of
hugging the field. Like, come on.
Who does that? The whole point that she's not, because she's witnessed this traumatic, violent murders, that she's still a very
peaceful, loving,
empathetic person, that she sees this lizard and she lets it go, and she hasn't been condemned or corrupted by the violence that she has seen. That was Argento's point with the whole movie.
Can I also mention that Argento and Claudia? I'm blanking on the.
what are we doing here?
We'll just wait here.
No, but he was busted for in possession of hashish during the pre-production of this film. So that ending, based on that knowledge, like, I think it makes sense that maybe he was like smoking some stuff and he was like, oh, let me put some, like, this whole scene in the Swiss Alps with her almost like dancing in this field and then, you know, loving insects and loving butterflies and hugging the like, it feels that way. Like, for me, my taste, and this is me alone, I'm an idiot. So, like, I think if we cut after that whole thing with the fire and everything, for me, it would have just elevated my feelings for this film. Because the rest of that is in here, it's almost like I almost shut it off every time when I watch this film, you know, like after that fire scene, because like there's no need for this guy to still be alive. There's no need for like the cops and the press to be tricked by a fucking mannequin, you know, like in the room or whatever. Like there's no need for any of that. Just kill him off, do that. And then maybe do like an epilogue or whatever, where she's like writing something and she's like, you know, I'm definitely not like my mom and I love things or whatever. And
I do like that explanation, whatever, you know. Though, John. So, you know, thanks for that, you know, background.
Yes. Well, yeah, for me, I'm expecting her to grab that lizard and like squish it in her hands or something. And that's kind of the stinger of like, oh, she really is like her crazy mother.
Lizards don't usually make it through an Argento movie.
That's true.
There you go. Woman with a lizard's skin. No, okay. Okay. Here, I didn't realize I had to go to Wikipedia, and I've seen this movie twice, forgotten it once, but you know, the whole explanation as to what our killer's deal was, I didn't get it. I mean, I knew that he was sleeping with Betty's mom at some point, but maybe it's because all these explanations are kind of vomited out, and usually it's like Italian screaming and crying or something. But all right, see if this checks out, gang. Santini, who is our killer, reveals that he was once the teenage lover of Betty's mother and murdered young women at her behest, but killed the mother due to her escalating demands. Betty witnessed the murder from behind a partly open door. Now, years later, Santini's desire to kill has been rekindled by Betty's appearance, which he sees as her mother's reincarnation. Yada, yada, yada. Is that
really
what happened?
Reincarnation? He did. Have an affair with Betty's mom, who is right. A sadistic nutcase. But that it's from what I can remember, she wouldn't let him do as much as he wanted to, as far as to her. Mm-hmm. So she was having him kill women in front of her that would turn her on. But after a while, where she kept stringing him along, he eventually killed her. He wanted to make Betty like her mom by his thought process that if I show you brutal violence in front of you, you will change to be like your mother. That's the reason for the needles on the eyes and the way he was killing people.
Yeah, forcing her to observe.
That makes sense. And I do like the kind of the theme that's carried throughout the film of having to watch these horrific acts. I mean, it does recall kind of Clockwork Orange of not being able to literally close your eyes because you've got the devices keeping them open. In this case, it's so simple. It's just these nails or needles with a little bit of scotch tape slipped under each eye. It's rather horrific. But in keeping with the theme, I think the ending, the very ending, makes a lot of sense because there is that idea of not only do you have to watch these horrible things, you can't necessarily trust everything that you're seeing. And your vision, whether it's your memory or actual sight, your periphery, can be affected by things. The bit where Betty puts the eye drops in her eye when she's in the apartment, and that leads to the entire crazy sequence involving Detective Sawavi and, oh my gosh, there's a killer in the apartment. Wait, did he just leave? Is that the detective outside the door? Can't see what's going on. The idea of her seeing, not quite being able to see at the end when she's shooting blindly into this room at her assailant and the room's on fire. The idea of him slipping a dummy into the fire, I think it's kind of genius. Now, I agree. I think Brian might have said it. Maybe it was Kitley. Don't remember. Sorry. I'll credit you, whoever speaks up and says it was me. The idea that the Italian police could not figure out that the killer's corpse in the room was made out of wood and plastic, that's a little bit sketchy, but I think it's a cool idea and also answers a question. When we see the body that's on fire, I'm like, where did his head go? Like, is a little pistol. I don't think she literally blew his head off. It's not like she had a shotgun or something, but the head of the body was clearly missing or melted or something strange. So yeah, it makes sense that it was, you know, a partial dummy, I guess. But yeah, I don't know if the very ending. Yeah, it's strange, especially when she's running down the hills. And I was thinking the hills are alive with the sound of murder. did the cops really?
That was going to say, the cops.
Real quick, did the cops hate the director, Marco? Because they sure waited until after he was good and dead to make their presence known. Sorry,
but they were there. They were there. Like, the helicopter was there. The dogs were there. So they were, like, there. They literally waited until he was, like, stabbed 80 times or whatever, and then they intervened, you know.
Figured he would be able to...
This guy's movies suck, yeah.
They figured he would be able to run away. I mean, he was an Olympic gold medalist for running.
Was he?
I don't...
Chariots of Fire, everybody. I liked it. Thank you, John.
Man.
Oh, I missed it.
Tough crowd. Reference.
I was going to say the ending, you know, whether it works or not, whether you like it or not, I mean, there is a bit of, and maybe it's obvious and that's why we haven't discussed it, but it's like, obviously it's a little meta, right? I mean, he's the director is supposed to be Argento. They're the Alps. He's filming insects. I mean, it's supposed to be like he's making phenomena, right? I mean, it's this weird little, like, Argento is a weird guy.
Really?
One of the things I really respect about him is that he does not give an F about anybody else thinks about whatever. Like,
absolutely.
Dracula, he made Dracula, and it was like, to him, it was like a comedy, and he didn't care that people didn't like it. Like, that was just the movie he wanted to make. The fact that he just wanted to, I want to go shoot in the Alps, and I want to shoot with insects. Like, he's making phenomena. And I don't care if the ending doesn't work or not. This is what I want to do. Here's one little thing. It's going back to what Brian started and then Ian talked about. The visual of the needles, when I started getting into this stuff in the late 90s, that was like the unofficial, like, logo for Italian horror and giallo movies. Like, it was on books. It was like the cart, like the illustration of it, not necessarily. Yeah. Like the illustrated version of it. When I was getting into it, was like, that was the symbol that signified what, like, giallo and Italian movies were all about in, like, the late 90s into the early 2000s. So that's a powerful image that I think still kind of stands the test of time as one.
Well, as I was watching, like, it opens with the Raven's Eye, and I was like, this is a movie that is all about seeing, being seen, being recognized, being observed. You know, like, the theme goes all the way through. It's funny you said that, Blake, because I was like, as I'm watching this opera as being realized in the film, I was like, this production is an absolute mess. Like, I'm like, is this what Argento wanted to do? Like, he's like, this is going to be great. And it's like, no, there's a reason why you didn't get to make that production there, Dario. It's like, because I'm just watching, I'm like, who has, like, birds, like, flying all over the stage and just, like, random. I do love kind of the operatic setting. I love that we get to have that heightened quality with the music and the performances and things like that. And it's a natural, I can see why Dario would be naturally attracted to the idea of directing an opera, because everything is heightened and it does sustain that kind of over the top visuals and sound and things like that. But as I was watching that production, I was like, man, this is just a disaster. Like, this, I can't imagine anybody watching, and the critics responded to it. So I was kind of like, is he making fun of himself? You know, like, because the critics are all like, this production sucks. She's great, but this production is ridiculous.
Really? Like, I think this was his most expensive production at the time, you know, like with all of his films. And I think it's funny that you mentioned the Ravens, because I don't know what this translates into 1987 American budget, whatever, but I think it costs 8 to 9 million lira.
Hmm.
And the crows alone cost 1 million of that lira. So oh, I'm sorry, the ravens. I keep saying crows because of that goddamn stupid crow trailer that I just watched. So that's still in my head. But I think that was like, it was just super expensive for an Argento film at the time.
Worth noting that when he eventually did direct an opera of Macbeth, there were no ravens.
Did he actually go on to do that?
He did direct a stage version of Verdi's Macbeth, and it takes place in like around World War I times, according to the.
Well, that's why you see the guy with the World War I helmet like rolling through this one. And I was like, what's happening right now?
Well, and I want to know
one thing worth noting about his version of it is when he kills the king, it's like a total homage to Deep Red. Like it's the window and he's pressed up against the window. He's getting stabbed. So he's not afraid to, as with the end of this movie, give little nods to his own career.
So Blake, you've seen this then?
Yeah, it's on Blu-ray.
It is.
It's like an Italian Blu-ray, but it is, you can watch it subtitled so that you can understand what's going on if you don't know the story of Macbeth well enough to follow it without the words.
I've got to seek that out because that sounds like crazy in all the good ways. Just curious, when was that production? Was that
about 10 years ago, maybe?
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, it's not that long ago.
Nice. Talking about the production value and the cost. I mean, in addition to the outrageous costumes and like this kind of like post-apocalyptic set design. What really struck me was what he does with the camera.
Mm.
I mean, Blake, you've got that great opera house background behind you. It really is evocative of the sort of the climax of this film where, you know, it occurs to me, I don't think we've even really talked about what this movie's about. So
it doesn't really matter. Betty,
good luck.
Betty is a young opera singer who gets her big break when the lady that she is understudying gets into a car accident, breaks a leg, which is supposed to be good luck in showbiz. But she gets on stage and she makes a big splash, and all of a sudden there are murders happening, and she gets caught up in them. A lot of them involve her being suddenly tied up with this kind of needle device placed under both of her eyes and forced to watch as people that she knows and has been intimate with are, you know, gutted in front of her. And there's a big mystery as to what's going on. Now, contemporaneous to this, the production of Verdi's Macbeth involves a bunch of ravens that are let loose to kind of fly around the theater while the performance is going on. And in fact, as the movie opens, we have the performer that will eventually be in that car accident having a meltdown. I don't think we actually see her, right?
We never see Mara, no.
Right. We see her leg, like watching a televised performance of Betty on stage, and she like basically almost breaks the TV. But she says, I have to sing. How can I do this with a raven on stage who hates me? I just love that. You know, look, she is perfectly in line with our Julia character. That's my last defense of Julia. So essentially what happens at the one of the murders that happens is someone breaks our assailant breaks into the wardrobe department kind of after hours and slashes up the dress that Betty is wearing. And also a number of these ravens get out, and this person hacks the ravens to death. And there's some lore that's shared about, you know, the memory of ravens, that when there's like a horrible murder, if someone wants to bad enough, they can come back from the spirit realm and enact oh, wait, that's a different film. Sorry. That ravens remember, and they will go back and attack people if they come across them again. So at the end, there's this brilliant tactic where the ravens are let loose during the opera, and they locate the killer out of all the hundreds of people in the audience and peck his eye out. And one of the greatest moments ever in a movie, why this is one of my top Argentos, is we get the one raven with the eyeball hopping around on the floor, and he just eats the eye. I'm like, yes, you go.
He doesn't, well, he doesn't eat like, it. He spits it out. Yeah, exactly.
Yes. Yeah. He doesn't like chomp it or anything, but yeah, it's definitely in his mouth. And
I wanted to just throw out, since you were talking about the cinematography, that's Ronnie Taylor. And some of the other credits, because again, he's pretty well known. He won an Oscar for doing the cinematography for Gandhi, but he also did Ken Russell's Tommy. He did the Sea of Love, the underrated horror film Popcorn, and then he went on to do Phantom of the Opera and Sleepless for Argento later.
Wow. That's quite the eclectic career there.
I think it's a little bit of a misnomer that Argento's style, visual style, is color, like weirdly colorful. I mean, he does it in Suspiria and opera, but like really his style is like movement, you know. Mm-hmm. He's not afraid to do like crazy crane shots, whether it's Tenebrae or he does one in here too, like up the side of the building, or the zip line and Suspiria, or the crazy point of view of the ravens. I don't know if there's like a single locked down shot in this movie. I mean, the camera feels very... like it's constantly moving, and not in like an annoying way, like Kenneth Branagh's, like Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, where it's like, you know, you feel like you're on the rotor, like at an amusement park. It's gorgeously photographed.
The shot of the pillow with the feathers just kind of like flowing out of it on the street, you know, just like they're just really great imagery. Go ahead, Blake. Sorry.
And then like that shot where he like hands him the feather, and like the camera tilts. Like that one little shot there, like
the shot through the keyhole, you know, like there's a lot of really dynamic stuff.
I love kind of that giallo late 70s period of De Palma. But one of the things that stands out about De Palma's like visual style is like I've come to really like it, but in the beginning, it was like he's constantly reminding me we're watching a movie. There's like split screens and like split diopters. And it's like, I always like, I just want, just let me get into the story instead of just reminding me that we're watching a movie every 2 seconds. Argento does that. And I think because of like the people that like giallo movies, the people that like Argento, they're just, you know, like I always say, you just let it wash over you. Like you can't get caught up in a lot of the details. You just have to experience it. So for me, it's like the opposite thing with Argento. It's like one of the things that I love about his movies, that we are constantly being reminded that it's a movie. It's maybe in a lot of ways not quite as intrusive to me on a personal point of view as some of that De Palma period in the late 70s or early 80s, but he is always like, hey, you know, what kind of trick shot can we do here? You know, I want to see the bullet go through the through the people.
It's that, I mean, that I had forgotten about that shot somehow. But yeah, when the great Daria Nicolodi is in the apartment, she plays Betty's agent, and she goes there when the killer is either outside or inside. There's someone who shows up claiming to be a detective, and he's like, look, I'll show you my badge. Look, here's my gun. And she looks through the peephole, and we see the bullet come out of the chamber, go through the peephole and through the back of her head, and everything's kind of like slow motion and crazy violent. It's a breathtaking shot. I mean, even if you know what's coming, you kind of forget how awesome it is. And what I liked about this movie in particular, Blake, you hit on something I think important, is I was constantly being taken out of the movie, but it's almost like this meta thing. It's a movie about a horror director directing an opera. And it's supposed to be a metaphor for the horror director directing a movie about an opera that is a horror film. But I love that, like the first, I think, kill of the film is the stagehand, whoever follows the killer into the balcony and ends up getting his head rammed into the back of the coat hook. Horrible death. But the next shot is this light rig falling down and crashing onto the floor. in any other horror film that would have been the body of the stagehand being tossed over. You know, we don't really discover what happens to him until later, but then they're like, look, the show, you know, keep singing. The show has to go on. We'll take care of this over here. So it very much felt like almost like I was watching something happening on the set of opera while they were filming this scene in which something horrible had happened on the set of opera. I was just like fascinated by all these different layers of storytelling. And that kind of carries throughout the film. I'm watching it thinking, my God, what did it, even though I know it's special effects and makeup and stuff, you still see the little like speckles of blood on the pins as they're in, you know, Betty's eye. I'm like, how close did that get to her actual eye? The first time we see it, I swear it looked like it almost just slit her cornea or something. It's really gross. But it's still, it's a guy who loves making movies and freaking audiences out, kind of like showing us how he's doing it. And he's like, I'm going to scare you. I'm going to make you very uncomfortable as you're watching a movie about people who are being made uncomfortable. I think out of all of the movies I've seen out of Argento, I think this is possibly the one that does that, at least that I can recall, the best, because I was supremely unnerved almost from start to finish watching it this time.
I think it's worth noting too that around this time, like in the 80s, mid 80s to late 80s, they were playing around with that concept, like with, you know, like I'm the guy that always mentions, you know, demons or whatever, but he wrote and produced Demons, and it's kind of that movie about that meta about, like, you know, a horror movie within a horror movie. And then, like, later on when Suave makes Stage Fright, it's, you know, the killer within is the one that's, like, in this production or whatever on stage. So, like, there's a lot of play with art and the way that we perceive it and the way we perceive horror movies in particular, and the storyteller and everything. Like, it's pretty prominent in a lot of these, like, older 80s Italian movies, I think.
There's a couple of... Go ahead, John.
I was going to say, Argento had said that the whole concept of the needles on the eyes came from seeing his films with an audience where everybody was turning away or covering their eyes at the violent part. So he came up with this idea that, no, you have to watch. So it's not necessarily the character of Betty having to watch violence. It's to tell the audience, you have to watch the film. You can't turn away. You can't close your eyes. You have to watch. And I think this film actually does do a brilliant explanation of, like we have all said, the visuals to this. It doesn't have the elaborate colored palette, but it has a ton of camera tricks or interesting camera work and movement, from when you see the close-up of the brain and it's thumping. And then at some points we're watching characters and the film looks like it's twitching.
Yeah, the heartbeat.
With the heartbeat.
Yeah.
It's all part of him making that visual statement. That's not the full color palette, but just the visual. And I think that's one of the reasons why I still like this.
Well, I think, and that's what I was going to say, Blake's point of, like, reminding you that you're watching a movie. I mean, those are all very much calling attention to the cinema of it, but it's also done in a way that evokes feeling. It evokes emotion. When we are watching from Betty's eyes and we have the needles in front of our eyes, like, that puts us in that place. And, you know, it's oftentimes we're put in the position of the killer, you know, and we're watching through their POV. To watch it from the victim side of things is really kind of exciting as well, especially when that's what it's about. It's how her being exposed to the violence and we are being exposed to it. And we feel like we have the needles under our eyes. You know, and that idea of the pulsing camera, you know, like, I think that it has nothing to do with anything that's going on. It doesn't serve the narrative. What it serves is an emotional response for the audience.
Well, I think you just did something with your hands there, AC, that reminded me of what we were talking about with the origin of Argento wanting to make the audience look. You know, a lot of times when you're watching a movie, or we're all jaded old guys, so we haven't done this since we were kids. But, like, the whole idea of, I can't watch this, I have to put my hands over my eyes and I'm peeking through them, through my fingers, where I think that's, I feel like on a certain level, that's what those needles could represent, is the fingers kind of like obscuring our vision. But like the killer says, we can't look away. we're not allowed to. I do want to ask though, this isn't a plot hole, but it's an honest question. Okay, we've seen the black leather gloves. Is he really wearing?
I was
really
going to ask the same thing. I was going to ask, like, just now. I was going to ask the same thing.
Is he really wearing, like, plastic, like, latex gloves on top of black leather gloves? If so, why? Is that a fetish?
He doesn't want to get them messed up. Come on, these are his only pair.
They're expensive Italian leather
exactly.
gloves.
Exactly. You
know? Double protection.
I mean, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I mean, I know that the gloves. The rubber gloves, Argento made this in like 86, comes out in 87. He talks about how the impact of AIDS is like really strong on the movie. And it's why he calls it a loveless movie. Although, you know, other than John's favorite movie, Trauma, I'm not sure which Argento movie has an actual romantic relationship in it.
Animal of the Opera.
But I think it was that. I mean, it was condoms on the black leather gloves.
Well,
I just, can I throw great. Something out like the idea that like Argento is often called the Italian Hitchcock. I feel like the use of birds also calls back to Hitchcock's The Birds, and that was something that clicked for me the first time. I was like, oh, he's actually using birds as his weapon here. In the same way that Hitchcock did back in 63.
My question is, did I miss it? Is there like significance to the bracelet at some point later?
Oh my
in
gosh.
The movie?
Thank you, Blake. No, I'm just like, what? So,
it's like this damning piece of evidence that he needs to get back.
I literally
and then, like,
rewound
the magnifying glass and like, what are we looking
like,
at?
What happened?
Well, it looks like an anniversary date is on there.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah.
Never pays off. It's so good.
Or does it? There's someone. Someone's written about that bracelet. It's a red herring, or in this case, a red heron, I guess. Wow. But it doesn't. I don't think it quite matters. My question is when he's because we don't really see it. It's one of the rare instances of restraint, I think, in an Argento film in terms of violence. Going back to my favorite character, Julia, when she's getting cut up in that wardrobe room, it looks like, and the close-up of the scissors going, crank, you know, is really working. Is he cutting up her breastplate?
Like the throat area?
Oh, okay.
He's got to get the...
He's got to get the magical necklace.
It's a bracelet. Okay, so we're gonna as we close up here, we're gonna go back and actually look at some comments because we've been getting them throughout the hour.
Ooh, we got comments.
Good.
Oh. We do.
Jonas,
yes. Back again. Good evening, guys. Good evening / afternoon, or as John Kittley likes to say at the beginning of all these, good morning. Let's see, David Wilt. This movie sounds like the Phantom of the Opera meets one of those movies where a celebrity is staked. I'm assuming stalked because staked that would be vampire. Dario Argento's Dracula. Argento, by a psychotic man type movies. Kind of, yeah, there's some of that there. Let's see. Big Swifty, hey, gents, great camera work in this one. Well, thank you. It's pretty much just stationary for all of us, but I appreciate. Oh, you mean opera? Okay. But Brian, you know what I'm going to say about this one on the whole. Well, don't keep us in suspense, Swifty. What do you think Swifty has to say about opera, Brian?
I don't know.
He says, you know what I'm going to say about it.
I think if memory serves me correctly, he's not a huge fan of this.
Okay. Hey, no judgment. Not one that we'll voice anyway. Martin Caballero. Hi, guys. This is one of my favorite Argento films. I was lucky enough to see it a couple of times last year in Argentine cinemas.
Nice.
One old 35mm copy and the new 4K version, too. Ooh. You mentioned that there is a 4K version coming, right? From Severin?
I believe so, yes.
Okay.
If memory serves.
We're still a few ways from a few years off from an anniversary, but this is one that I would love to see in a theater. Just because, I mean, again, the climax with the ravens alone and people like ducking out of the way and even the effect of the bird, you see the bird feather kind of like in the upper left-hand frame of the film. It could be cheesy, but I think it was really, really effective. However, they pulled that off. And then also Martin says it was a great experience to share it with an audience, even though the ending was not very well received. I can imagine. I wonder, maybe Martin, can you speak to this? Did you notice during the, towards the end of the film, and maybe this is people who are familiar with what was coming, did you notice people getting up and leaving after Betty is rescued from that room?
And were their names Brian Martinez?
Oh, there you go. Because that would be very funny, just like mass walkouts. You know, hey, we still have 10 minutes left of this movie. No, we don't.
No, you don't.
Cool. Well, yeah, thank you everyone for commenting. Yeah, I guess we're just at about time here, gang. So any closing thoughts on Dario Argento's opera?
I think is it in fact what has been called, which is his last like great movie? Do you feel that way? Any of you?
Trauma.
I mean, there's trauma still to come. So, you know,
I know, but I mean, you know, I love Trauma. Again, what? But
I would say that it is, other than Sleepless, which I'm a huge fan of, like Sleepless.
Sleepless,
but I think this is his last great one.
Yep. Yeah, I would concur.
Giallo is amazing.
Is it?
Who are you?
I've never actually.
You know what? You would be a great pod, because how are you going to disguise to be Brian? Put on a demon shirt.
Yep.
Then everybody's going to go, yep, that's Brian.
Clearly, it's Brian.
I've never actually seen Sleepless, so I'll have to remedy that at some point. Although I do
watch it on the show. It's a giallo.
Well, but I want to do it special. I want to see it on a big screen, and I want to travel to Washington so I can actually see Sleepless in Seattle. What?
Just sorry. Get real close.
What?
We should
to watch it on a big screen.
Nice. All of us could like not sleep the night before the episode.
There
and
you go.
Watch, and then like discuss Sleepless.
It might improve the quality of my commentary, honestly.
Ian, where are you going to find a theater that's going to show you a half hour of the film and then come back at 4 a.m. and watch the other part? No theater's going to do that.
They shots might. Fired. That sounds like a great gimmick. Let's see. Okay, we have one last comment from Big Swifty. I agree, Jay Blake, his last decent one. Okay, and that will be the final word on that. But anyway, thank you guys for hanging out and talking opera. I really do. My schedule be damned. I miss hanging out with you guys every month, but I'm glad we can do it every other month. So we'll be back in, oh my gosh, May. Yeah, May to talk about something else. I'm not sure exactly what that'll be. But folks out there, if there's a film, a giallo film that you would like us to discuss, even to revisit, you know, please let us know in the comments and we will take under advisement, as it were, and plan the next curriculum. But until then, I have been Ian Simmons of Kicking the Seat. We have Aaron Christensen of Horror 101 with Dr. AC. We have John Kitley of Kitley's Crypt, Brian Martinez of the Giallo Room, soon to make its triumphant rebranded, revamped return to YouTube next week, so stay tuned. And Jay Blake Fakera of Scored to Death. Let's see. I also want to point out, because I don't think we did a show. I think we did a show right before we did this. But yes, if you haven't checked out the interview that Brian and I did with the great Sergio Martino, please check it out. Yes, you've got that. You got like ink on that poster, Brian. Like, how dare you?
Oh,
no. What's that?
And the...
you still have the cup. That has not been rinsed. I know it. I know it.
No, it has not. And okay. whenever I want to like feel Sergio, I drink from this cup.
There you go.
Yikes. Okay. Sorry. Big Swifty, you keep commenting, so I got to read them. The Girl in Room 2A.
That's a what suggestion.
That? Okay. Yeah. And one of my favorites. Okay. What do we think of The Girl in Room 2A? I don't know that one.
I mean, we got 2 months to come up with another
powwow. Blake mentioned Amsterdam'd, and that's one that I would also be keen to revisit.
Okay.
It is a non-Italian slasher, but it's...
We should watch Giallo in Venice.
See, we got the whole year lined up right now.
All right, well... I'm writing stuff down furiously, although I don't need to because I have the replay later. But
and
anyway.
if I can throw in a shameless plug,
sure.
Because this is St. Patrick's Day. If you've enjoyed and you're not done with YouTube, Stop on by Horror 101 with Dr. AC, where we are covering the entire Leprechaun franchise.
Oh,
all
wow.
Eight films. So stop by and raise a pint with us. Thanks.
Nice.
Yes, or a case of pints. The entire wow.
Is that happening live? Is that happening live?
That already happened. That already happened.
Oh, okay.
But it is up there. And
I thought you were doing like a live broadcast, because I was totally going to jump on there.
Well, I'll go back after this live stream is over and link that down below, so people can still get their St. Pat's on with you, AC. But anyway, thank you everyone. Thank you very much. Thank you, everyone, very much for hanging out once again. If you like this live stream, please like and subscribe and ring the bell for notifications. Please support all of my fellow Academia Giallians and all their various works linked down below. And until next time, whenever that is, whatever that is, thanks very much for watching Academia Giallo Opera. And take care. Oh, I'm going to do it right this time. Class dismissed.
Sláinte.
Wait, isn't that Irish?